plans for the future. Hi, this is Zdravko Stefanović from Walla Walla University School of Theology. I would like to welcome you to Good Word, our weekly radio program that focuses on biblical topics and discussions. Today we continue a series of topics based on the book of Numbers. And to help me explore some of the passages from this fascinating book in the Bible, I have here with me as my guests Dr. Kyle Craig, Professor of Chemistry at Walla Walla University, and Dr. Paul Dibdal, Professor of Religion here at Walla Walla University. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
And you remember that last week we talked about the rebellion that started when the spies came back from exploring the land of Canaan. And it was a serious rebellion. In fact, some even wanted to stone the leaders of God's people, Moses and Aaron. Moses interceded in behalf of the people. In spite of that, the people were punished and so on. And now as we go into chapter 15, the opening verses are almost shocking. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, after you enter the land I am giving you as a home, and you present to the Lord offering made by fire," and then the instructions on how to present that offering. Now, in the previous chapter, the people said, "We don't want to go into the promised land." And God said, "Well, right, you won't go there. You will all die in the wilderness." So how is it now that the Lord says, "After you enter the land," do these words surprise you?
Yeah, it does seem out of place. It's a hopeful kind of introduction, assuming a positive future that remains for them. All will not be lost. Somehow the home will be provided for them, and there will be an entrance into that home.
I also find here a ray of hope, because throughout the book of Numbers we see rebellion after rebellion, complaints and so on, and yet it seems that God steadily reminded people of where they were going. They were going to the promised land, and God didn't want to change his mind about it. So
It shows organization, too, you know, that God is planning for the future, and that's the type of organization. And, you know, one of the things that, Numbers sometimes gets a bad rap for being a book just all about census and about, you know, people doing bad things. But if you look at the numbers or the census side of things, God is a God of order, and he's a God who plans and knows what's going to happen. And so this is an indication of, hey, you know what? You guys just really messed up, but there's still a plan here. I still have it all organized out for you. It's still going to happen, just not the way that I wanted it to happen.
So the whole slave generation was to die, and their children would enter the promised land. That ties in with the next question. Why did the Israelites travel in a circle for 40 years if they could have reached the land of Canaan in a couple of weeks?
I guess a couple of things come to mind. I think of what the Lord said to Abram when he first came, that, you know, your descendants will enter into the land, but not yet, because the sin of the Amorites has not reached its full measure. So there's a sense in which God had work he wanted to do with the people living there in Canaan, and their downfall, their destruction was after all those efforts had been exhausted, so to speak. So there's that to consider. And then also, I think the time in the wilderness, all those that are nearly all of those who had the experience of Egypt will have passed away. There's a sense in which a brand new culture has been established now. And those who were who had the baggage, so to speak, that Egyptian culture are no more. And it's a kind of fresh start, I guess, in a way, as they enter into the promised land.
Good. Thank you. And our text also talks about the offerings or the sacrifices that people presented to God in the wilderness. There are items like flour, oil, grape juice, animal meat, especially roasted meat. Do these have special meaning when they are offered to God as sacrifice? Why these specific items? Why not just any object of value?
Well, I tried to answer a question like this several weeks back about specific items and what sort of tied them all together. I did my best, but then you came up with a much better answer.
Yeah, so why don't you answer your own question?
It seems to me they're gifts of hospitality, they're gifts of value, but I don't know beyond that. They're offering something that's precious and valuable to God.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't they also be things that they would have on hand, too, that they wouldn't have to take time out to specially go find in the wilderness or whatever?
And definitely that food items were very valuable and precious in the wilderness. And, you know, because after all, their survival, you know, was at stake when they were in the wilderness. And by presenting these to God, you know, they would show that they recognize everything that they had, everything that they possessed was coming from God. It is intriguing, though, I do not want to elaborate on this, but in certain passages of the Pentateuch, even the term okla, which is food, food for God, that's how the sacrifices are called. Uh-huh. Now, around Israel, that was a prevailing concept, but not in Israel. Nevertheless, the terminology is sometimes present also in the Pentateuch.
And you said you don't want to elaborate anymore on that, right?
I believe that the Bible generally teaches that God does not depend on the food that people, you know, present to him and so on. But the concept behind it was once willful recognition that everything comes from God. And in the case of the Israelites, definitely that food items were primarily. In the same chapter, there is another passage that also talks about sacrifices and present it to God and different rules on how to do it. So another question that I have is, are there examples when foreigners offered sacrifices to the Lord? So were these Israelites the only people who in the Bible were offering sacrifices to the true God? Or do we have instances in Israel or around Israel that foreigners were offering sacrifices to the true God?
Didn't Naaman offer sacrifices to God afterwards? After he was, I mean, it's not in the context now.
He did present like a gift, and he talked about going into the temple of a foreign god and how to.
But didn't behave. He? But didn't he take like mule loads of earth with him back to Assyria to sort of as a, I'm taking back some of your land, and I will offer sacrifices on that. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but.
Yes, that could be one example.
I think of one within this book, even Balaam, as he's inquiring of the Lord, offers a series of sacrifices in as part of the process of inquiring of the Lord. So he might be another.
These are good examples. Yeah. Noah, we could think of him. He was a non-Hebrew. Even though, you know, he served the Lord faithfully.
Job, I suppose.
Job would be another one. And in Exodus, Jethro is mentioned interacting with Moses and making preparations for the offering of the sacrifices, being a priest that did not pose any problem to him. Another question would be, should the first fruits of everything be given to God today? Because in these instructions, we also have the instructions about the first fruit of everything, which at the same time, in the context of the Bible and the Hebrew language, would be the best. So giving the first would be giving God the best. Why is it that we no longer do that? That we, you know, some people may do, for example, the first salary. There are some people who completely offer it to God. And there are parents who would like their children to serve God full time, especially the firstborn. Mm-hmm. Any comments you can make on the first fruit or the firstborn?
Well, you could think of maybe tithe a little bit like that as well, because, you know, because of the busy schedules that we often have, being connected to a university and traveling hither and yon, it doesn't work this way. But I like to think of it as when I get my paycheck, I return first the 10% back to God that is his, and then the remaining 90% less the offerings and whatever, you know, other things you want to do for the, on that level, then, okay, now the rest of this is mine and I can divvy it up to, you know, pay my mortgage and whatever else.
I like the sequence in which you have presented that, because I have heard also other people say, well, 9 out of 10 is for me and 1 is for God. But actually, we should begin with the one that belongs to God. So that would be like the first fruit. And then the rest of them are for my... So I really appreciate that you started with the one that belongs to God.
If first fruits are, you know, the implication is that the best is offered to God, then it seems to me like we should still offer the first fruits to God, not necessarily the first tomato in the garden or ear of corn or whatever, but the best that we have to offer, our best time, our best efforts, a tithe of our income, that, you know, doing that first, not seeing if we have enough left over, but first returning that to God. It seems like that's a principle that should apply to our lives today as well. We won't bring it all to the temple, but in different ways, I think we can offer these things to God, offer our best to God, not giving God the leftovers, but giving what is best.
I have family members who like to have very clean, new bills when they give an offering in the church. And, you know, this
kind of neat.
It is. And some, I hope that no listener will misunderstand what we are saying here. We do not want to pay too much attention to the form. And yet it may be an indication of, you know, how we approach offerings, how we give to God, and so on. It could be misunderstood.
Yet
on the other hand, we believe that that can be one nice external sign of how it's done. And this passage ends with a statement, the same laws and regulations will apply both to you and to the alien living among you. Again, is this a surprise statement? I don't know how many of our listeners would expect after presenting all these rules and regulations about sacrifices and everything. You know, there is a statement, you and the alien shall be the same before the Lord. Do these words probably anticipate the universal proclamation of the gospel in the New Testament?
I think so.
What would you say?
I think also in light of what we talked a few weeks back about how, you know, God's very inclusive of those who want to follow him. I think that's another reminder of it.
The Old Testament is the Word of God, but it is true that it is also the Hebrew Bible. And sometimes when we see the prominence of the Hebrew people in the Old Testament, that blinds us to all these other passages that God basically is the father of all the families of the earth, and Israel was God's firstborn. Nevertheless, God did care about the others as well. So to summarize today's discussion, I would put it this way, that God remains faithful in spite of human unfaithfulness. Gentlemen, Paul and Kyle, I would like to thank you very much for your valuable contribution to our discussion today. I'm also grateful to Suzanne Michael, our radio technician, and I would like to invite our listeners to join us next week as we continue to explore the messages from the Biblical Book of Numbers. Thank you for tuning in. For Good Word, I'm Zdravko Stefanovic.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.